Phew, what a day for the Boston Red Sox as they not only win game one against the Houston Astros in a three-game series, but also make a bevy of moves where we saw Jake Diekman, Christian Vasquez both be shipped out of town and more to talk about with fan-sided editor and former Locked On Red Sox host Gabrielle Starr. Let's get into it.
You are Locked On Red Sox, your daily Boston Red Sox podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I want to welcome you back into the Locked On Red Sox podcast, and thank you so much for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen of every single day. We have a very special guest today after a crazy Red Sox overall day with trades, a nice Astro win. Gabrielle Starr, the founder of Girl at the Game and fansite editor, is back and former Locked On Red Sox host. You know, the last time we spoke was right when the lockout ended, and it's pretty crazy everything that's unfolded since then.
It's definitely not how I saw the season going.
No way.
But I also couldn't really – this is the first year in a long time that I kind of feel like I haven't had a solid grasp of how the season was going to go. Like in 2018, I was like, I'm all in on this team. And then in 2019, I was like, this team is not going to do as well as they did last year. And then in 2020, like, we all knew that the team was going to be garbage. Like, there was not a single person that thought they were going to do well. And then last year, when I was hosting this show, we did predictions, video predictions, for the entire MLB department. And my prediction, and I love that I have this on video because people are like, oh, you didn't believe in them. I'm like, I literally believed in them in March of 2021. Yeah. My prediction was they are going to be better than everyone thinks. They're going to be fun to watch. And I think they're going to like be in the wild card race. And literally all of that was true. It was a very fun season. They won the wild card game and vastly exceeded expectations. This was the first year where I was kind of like, I don't really know how I feel about this team. And I'm not saying I'm like psychic or anything. It's just that, you know, I've been watching this team my whole life, and it's, you kind of get a feel, if you're as psychotically ingrained and invested as I am, you kind of start to read the patterns and the vibes. And it just was like, they're spending money, but like, do we like how they're spending money? You know, the Xander Devers negotiations is very similar, kind of bleak cloud hanging over the season, the same way Mookie in 2019, also a year that they had high expectations after a deep postseason run, very high payroll, you know, et cetera, whatever. And here we are, where they are literally chopping the 2018 team into bits and selling them for parts right before our eyes. Not that a significant portion of them weren't already gone, but I feel like it's very different right now because it's a lot of them all at once. Whereas like there was Mookie and Price together, but other than that, it was kind of a gradual dissipation. And now it's like the remaining contracts of 2018 players besides Xander and Devers are up. And so it's going to happen like all at once, one fell swoop, fire sale, you know, kind of thing.
This reminds me, you know, it's funny that you bring up 2019 because this also reminds me so much of 2014 too, with the Lester and Lackey trades. It's just guys that like I had, you know, emotional connection to, and you know, you brought up the contract negotiations. That was something that we heard all throughout 2014 with Lester, and obviously how that all folded. But it was pretty crazy for me getting home from work and seeing the news about Christian Vasquez. And you know, the first thing that I saw, which broke my heart, was how he found out. And I think that's, you know, I've been a sports fan, especially a Red Sox fan, you know, since like probably 2005, 2006, when I actually really started watching. And I've never seen somebody's immediate reaction to getting traded like that.
Yeah, you know, it was really, really disappointing. I'm not sure we have clarity. At least I haven't seen clarity on when exactly he was told, but it looks like, and I'm saying looks like because I'm not 100% sure, but it looks like he got the official confirmation when he was on the field at Minute Maid. You know, there were rumblings, kind of rumors when they were in the clubhouse, but it looks like from the videos and the timing, it lines up that he actually found out while he was like out there doing kind of BP and drills with his teammates. And, you know, to me, I don't know if it was a miscommunication or just like they did not care, but letting your longest tenured homegrown player find out in front of the world that he is being traded, and then to have him have to walk off the field and be swarmed by media members because you literally there is literal video footage of him trying to walk down the dugout steps and being like vultures on a carcass, swarmed, getting, you know, microphones and iPhones with like the recording app on shoved in his face. And you can see the video. He is visibly upset. He looks like he's near tears. And who can blame him? He's been with this team since 2008. You know, everyone talks about, myself included, everyone talks about, you know, Xander and JBJ are the longest tenured big leaguers because they debuted in 2013 and Bogart and Vasquez debuted in 2014. But Vasquez was drafted the year before they signed Bogarts. They drafted him in the ninth round of 2008. They signed Bogarts as an international free agent in 2009. So, yes, technically, you know, Bogarts and JBJ were on the big league team first, but Vasquez is their longest. Like Vasquez goes back to Theo Epstein and like the beginning of Dustin Pedroia's big league career and like young David Ortiz. And it's actually, when you think about it, kind of mind blowing now that David Ortiz is in the Hall of Fame that these guys who are being traded, some of them are the last links to the David Ortiz era of the Red Sox. To me, like that, you know, that is what, like, I never really thought about it that way because I think of David Ortiz as like, okay, he's retired, he's in the Hall of Fame, he's in the past, which of course is like something I will never fully want to accept, but it's the
It's
truth.
crazy.
But, you know, like Vasquez, Bogarts, JBJ, like these are guys who came up and then debuted kind of towards the end of his career. They were on his last postseason team in 2016, and now they are being traded. You know, he's young. Vasquez is 31. He's not, it's not like his career is done, but likely this is the end of his Boston career. And so this is the end of, you know, the players who played with Poppy kind of thing and the players of 2018. So the whole thing is just very upsetting. And it just shows me kind of a lack of sensitivity and respect to a guy who deserved better. You know, you shouldn't have your World Series champion players that you are already trading because, you know, you didn't construct a good enough roster. You know, this roster, like, I don't want to get into the whole thing, but like, you know, you sign Walker Hill and Paxton. That's an extremely risky trio of older, injury prone. Hill, not so much because he's a workhorse, but like, you're signing three guys, one of whom is injured, like, is coming back from surgery, one of whom is somewhat injury prone, and all three of them are on the older side. And you know, Nathan Eovaldi, they've gotten very lucky with his contract, but he's had a lot of injuries in his career too. I mean, he's had two Tommy John surgeries. They got him from the Rays when he was injured. You know, he's had a lot. So you're playing it fast and loose. Plus, of course, Chris Sale. So I'm kind of like, well, you know, you're trading all these guys and breaking up the band, but it's because the guys that you added during the offseason were huge risks. And so when they inevitably got hurt, now it's somehow the guys who aren't hurt and who are doing well, it's somehow them who are being shipped off, whose families are being displaced, who are leaving the place that they've played for their entire, some of them for their entire careers. And it's just, I know baseball's a business, but I said this on Twitter and I was like, you know, there's just something very cruel about having a guy take batting practice with his teammates if you're 90% sure that you're going to trade him.
I mean,
You gotta pull him off the field and let him process it alone and not have to deal with that. Like, instead, you know, he's out there by himself, you know, and then a PR person comes out and like tries to pull him away. It's like, this is very, it's a very bad look for the organization that he's being treated this way. And then afterwards, Chaim Bloom's on Zoom during the game telling media members he always hopes the Red Sox, that Vasquez will call the Red Sox home. It's like, what are you talking about? Like, threw him under the bus in front of like 30 reporters. How do you hope that he, I mean, this is the worst possible ending to his very admirable time here.
I agree. And, you know, I mean, you brought up 14 years he's been with the organization. And that's the one thing that I thought was sort of odd, is that he let Devers and Bogaerts know that they weren't being traded, but the longest tenured guy, he didn't give a little bit of a hint to him. So then, you know, maybe there could be a standing ovation or something at Fenway Park, because I looked at the Astros schedule. They're not supposed to go to Fenway Park for the rest of the season. So that could be, from what we saw, you know, a few days ago, the last time that Christian Vasquez is in Fenway Park for the next year and a half. And it's pretty crazy on how it all unfolded. As you mentioned, Bloom talked about it after or during the game. He said, this one, I know, hurts in the clubhouse. Very aware of that. I know it hurts. That's something that we don't take lightly, with these guys busting their tails out there as we speak. But the Red Sox were able to get the number 12 Astros prospect and the number 21 Astros prospect. The one guy that Bloom seemed very high on is Emmanuel Vasquez. He's been able Valdez. To play first. Valdez.
We traded a Vasquez for a Valdez, so now we're all upset and jumbled.
So he's played first base, second base, third, and also left field and right field, and he's currently hitting 327 right now with 21 home runs across Double-A and Triple-A. Abreu, not as good as of a showing this season as Valdez. He's right now hitting 249 in Double-A with 15 home runs and 23 steals. So it's an interesting return. Honestly, they got a lot more than I expected for a guy like Christian Vasquez, but especially with how well he's been playing throughout this season and how much of a need the catching position is for the Astros, I'm not surprised. We hope that you are enjoying this episode of the Locked On Red Sox podcast, but I just want to take a second to talk to you about Built Bar Puffs. And if you haven't tried Built Bar yet, you are missing out, especially their Puffs flavors. And they have a brand new flavor out right now. It's the delicious cookie dough chunk puffs. It's only 160 calories with a whopping 15 grams of protein. And something about Built Bar that really blew my mind when I first heard it is that they're covered in 100% real chocolate. And it's the easiest and best way to not only eat healthy, but eat good food as well. So you can have this, you know, before your workout, after your workout. And it's a great way to be able to get all that healthy nutrition in one small bar. But you're going to love the new cookie dough chunk puffs. Whether you need a snack for a workout or a late night treat, Built is the perfect protein bar, and they taste better than a candy bar. So ditch the calories, fat, and sugar and grab yourself a Built bar. Go to built.com, use promo code LOCKEDON15 and get 15% off of your order. Use promo code LOCKED15 to get 15% off your order. And we want to thank you so much for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen of every single day. Now, if you forgot, today is the trade deadline. So make sure to go over to Locked On MLB to hear all the breakdowns. Lauren and I are even going to be a part of the live show and giving our live reactions to all the moves that the Red Sox make this afternoon as the trade deadline gets a little bit closer. So go over right now and subscribe to Locked On Red Sox, the podcast that you're listening to right now, to make sure to hear all of our reactions to all the moves that the Boston Red Sox make today. Greatly appreciate everybody tuning in. Now let's get back to our conversation with Gabrielle Starr.
Yeah, you know, I mean, the thing is, it's a short-term rental. Vasquez is going to be a free agent at the end of this year. So, you know, they get him for 2 months plus a postseason run. I will say that Vasquez's catching is hard to come by in the current market. And add on the fact that Vasquez has so much postseason catching experience, and it does up the asking price for him. I mean, he was on 2016, 2017, 2018, 2021, all postseason teams. And so that, including, you know, against the Astros, you know, last year and in 2018. So this is a guy who's got that experience. And, you know, you look at how repetitive kind of the postseason rotation of teams has been the last few years, and you realize that that did give the Red Sox kind of an edge in, like, kind of presenting him to suitors of, like, well, mm-hmm. not only is he a veteran, you know, very well-regarded catcher, he's right. a catcher with postseason experience. Like, that's not the norm. You know, like, for example, in addition to the Red Sox, I've been covering the Phillies for the last, like, year plus. And JT Realmuto and Gene Segura, Realmuto, obviously, their catcher, one of the best catchers in the league. The two of them are the league leaders among active players in career regular season games played without reaching the postseason.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you've got – all I'm saying is hard to come by, so I can understand a little bit what Bloom got in return. Mm-hmm. I will also say, I mean, I don't think that the Astros farm system, I am pretty sure when I was looking at the rankings at the beginning of the season, their farm system is not ranked very well no. at all. So it's like not like you're, yeah. So it's not like you're saying, you know, oh, we got, I mean, who was number one this year? Was it the Mariners?
It was the Dodgers were up there.
Oh God, they're always
kind of crazy. Seriously,
whatever. So you know, it's not like you're saying, you know, one of the top five farm systems gave you their number 12 prospect. Because mm-hmm. in that case, it's like, well, everyone in their farm system is probably really good. It's like, okay, we'll see. Yeah, you know, Valdez is hitting really well. You know, Abreu, we'll see. You know, if just with Chaim Bloom, you never know. Because you, on the one hand, you have to assume this is a guy who comes from a place that builds expert farm systems.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it's always kind of a crapshoot with prospects because only 10% of minor leaguers make it to the majors in the first place. Right. And an even smaller percentage of them actually reach free agency if they even stick at all for a long amount of time. So, you know, whatever, we'll see. I will say, of the three main people that I would expect them to trade from the 2018 team, which is Vasquez, JD, and Eovaldi, Vasquez is the youngest. So even though, you know, he's not as good of a hitter as JD, you know, and Eovaldi had a great game tonight, but on the whole, he has really struggled to limit runs this season. You know, Vasquez is the guy that I think in terms of at least years, you can get a lot for, mm-hmm. given the small catching market, you know, it's basically like him and Wilson Contreras. And it's like, that's
pretty much
it. but I mean, you know, with Bloom, one of the things I always come back to is like, he likes to talk about upside. There was this, when Brock Holt, and this also calls back to like my whole thing about how they informed Vasquez he was being traded. When Brock Holt didn't get, you know, brought back when he became a free agent after the 2019 season, he said very publicly that he did not get a single call from the organization. Like, not even to be like, thank you for everything. We're not going to be bringing you back, but we just want, like, not even a courtesy call.
And they replaced him with Jose Peraza.
Right. And so when, and when they did that, somebody asked, our friend Jason Mastrodonato of the Boston Herald, another former Locked On Red Sox host, asked Bloom about why Peraza instead of Holt when their numbers at the time were virtually identical. And, you know, Holt had the whole fan favorite, mm-hmm. you know, plus postseason, plus the Jimmy Fund, everything thing going for him. And Bloom kind of gave him this non-answer about upside. And by the end of 2020, Peraza was not even on the roster. And so
funny
it just
enough,
kind of,
now he's on the Woo Sox.
I know. Old friend returned. Also, Danny Santana, welcome back. I don't want to talk about it. But I'm just saying, like, it's kind of this, you know, I always talk about the Red Sox have patterns, but Bloom also has patterns of, like, mm-hmm. you know, he'll rave about somebody, but then at the end of the day. And I kind of would just rather them not rave at all, because it's like, if it's just fake to me. I understand you're not going to tell people on the outside your game plan. I'm not asking you to. I'm just saying, in a fan base like the Red Sox, like Fenway faithful Red Sox Nation, don't piss on our heads and then tell us it's raining instead, you know, because we're not like, we're too dialed in.
Yeah,
we know better. Yep. You know, if you're not bringing back Brock Holt, just be like, thanks for everything. We wish you the best of luck.
I agree.
You know, don't be like, oh, well, this guy has upside that Brock Holt doesn't. Brock Holt was here for like 4+ years.
Yeah, I agree.
And he did didn't last a full season.
He did a very similar thing when he was talking about the most recent Red Sox catcher, Reese McGuire, who the Sox got from the White Sox for Jake Diekman. You know, he said, you know, we like what Reese McGuire brings to the table, left-handed hitter asset on defense.
Left-handed hitter who has 0 home runs in 53 games this year.
And is batting .225. One thing I will say is that thank God the Sox got rid of Diekman's contract, because he was with them for next season too for $4 million. He's nowhere near worth that. And, you know, the upside that you can talk about, like some positives with Reese McGuire is, you know, he does have +7 defensive runs saved, 31%.
I wrote that tonight. I said he has a +7 defensive run saved. I don't think that there's no upside to McGuire. Like, I think it's a very different situation, obviously, than Holt and Peraza. You know, that was like a very niche example, but it's something I think about just in terms of every time I hear Bloom rave about somebody that you know isn't coming back.
Right.
You know, he also raved about Jackie Bradley Jr. After the 2019 season, and it was like, you knew he wasn't coming back. And the only reason that he did come back this year is because Bloom also got prospects for him.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And, you know, it's been fine. You know, his home splits are great. His away splits are literally less than half. If you cut his slash line in half, it would still be higher than his away splits. But you got prospects.
Mm-hmm.
But then you watched Hunter Renfro hit homers in back-to-back games at Fenway this weekend with the Brewers. So it's like...
So. I retweeted your tweet about the power that we gave up, especially with Schwarber. I think he hit his 33rd home run or something like that.
It's the most in the NL as of yesterday. You know?
Yeah, how that all played out is pretty crazy, especially with Renfro just going off against the Sox. But it's something where, like, especially with this Reese McGuire trade, it's kind of weird. I have a small past with this guy. I actually sent him fan mail when I was like, I can't even remember how old I was, like 12 years old. And it got lost in the mail. Like, the envelope ended up ripping and stuff. And he ended up signing 2 cards for me and sending it back and saying, hey, like, I got this, like, a ripped envelope. Wanted to make sure you got some autographs. And I actually met him at, like, spring training. I told him that story. He's like, oh, I remember that. And, like, I've been able to talk to him on social media. Such a nice guy, like, wicked down to earth. Hopefully, like, that correlates to the field. You know, hopefully we get some good stuff. But luckily, they're getting a good clubhouse guy. One guy I'm a little bit on edge about is Tommy Pham. You know, they acquired him from the Reds for a player to be named later. You know, obviously we've heard about the fantasy football issue that he had with Jock Peterson. Also, I don't know if you heard at the start of the season, he pretty much mentioned that, like, all he cares about this season is numbers. But that was also when, you know, like, the Reds had only won like 3 games in April. But, like, the vibes are just not good around this guy. And he seems to be a very egotistical type of player.
Yeah. Okay. So first of all, side note, I just saw from Marley Rivera that Alex Cora got very emotional talking about Vasquez getting traded. And he said that he spoke to Vasquez before BP, letting him know that there was a trade in the works. And Vasquez asked if he could take BP with the team today. So I guess it was more kind of like a one last hurrah with his buddies. Which is very, very, very heartbreaking. But I will say, you still should have come out and gotten him and taken him off the field when it was confirmed so that he didn't have to face the madness. But I just wanted to clarify that because we have some clarity now. Tommy Pham, I'm like, you know, so I'm writing about the Red Sox trades tonight. And of course, like, they had to do them all in a span of 10 minutes. So it was just like smacking me repeatedly in the head. I'm so confused by the Tommy Pham thing, because it's like, first of all, I tweeted this kind of as a joke of like, can't wait for the Red Sox to win the World Series with like 17 outfielders, no pitching, you know, because it's like, yeah, Diekman was not very good. I will say most of his appearances were scoreless. Like, yes, his walk rate was too high. He had three of their blown saves, but three is a very small number compared to the fact that they have over 20 blown saves. I think the Rays are the only team with more blown saves.
Which is crazy.
Yeah. And it was not the case for most of the season. We were firmly in the lead on that. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, how are we – I shouldn't say we because we're not the Red Sox, but like how are you getting pitching? Because like so far – the only thing that you have done is subtract a pitcher. We already have, you know, there are already like 11 players on the injured list and a solid five of them are pitchers at least. I mean, it's like, I think Rich Hill got activated. They said that he was going to pitch they said earlier this weekend that he was going to pitch tomorrow. Whatever. The point is, plus, you know, you're probably going to trade Eovaldi tomorrow.
Yep. Maybe Hill too. I'd be very surprised if he's on the bum still.
That's also what I was surprised about, because I, you know, when they said that he was going to be activated in time for his start on Tuesday, I was like, or he's activated in time to get traded, because this is a guy who gets traded pretty often at this point in his career. But the Tommy Pham thing to me is what doesn't really make sense, because it's like you already have more than enough underperforming outfielders, but sure, let's add a 34-year-old hothead who is like, first of all, expensive, because they're picking up a chunk of his contract this year, and then he has a 2023 mutual option or a buyout for next year, so they're on the hook for that too. So yes, they got rid of Diekman, but I'm pretty sure that between what they have to pay him this year and what they'd have to pay him as a buyout or an option next year, they will end up paying Tommy Pham more. So they're actually now on the hook slightly for a little bit more money than they would have been if they had just kept Diekman for next year. But regardless, you know, this guy like was a power hitter kind of in the late 2010s or 20-teens, whatever you call them. You know, he had like two or three years in a row where he hit 20 or more home runs.
Yeah.
But significant power drop over the last 3 years. I mean, he didn't really play very much in 2020, but last year and this year, you know, with the Padres and the Reds, like 15 home runs last year, respectable. Still a decline in power, but respectable for a 33-year-old guy. This year, 11 home runs in 91 games. Obviously the Reds are kind of a dumpster fire, but you know, the guys like, you know, his on-base percentage has dropped, his slugging percentage has dropped, his OPS has dropped. Like OPS plus is 88, which is basically an OPS minus technically. This is not a guy who is like worth, you know, $4+ million over the next year and a half. Like if you're,
I think this is an indication that
I would have rather kept, like, I would have rather kept Diekman. And I said the same thing. I said, if they got Tommy Pham, they're probably trading JBJ. I would guess to the Phillies.
I wouldn't be surprised
because of the Dombrowski connection.
So he's only played left field and DH for the Reds so far this year. And so you're just going to put Verdugo in right.
It can't be worse than Franchi Cordero.
Yeah, seriously.
Who I love, but like, my God.
Because like the only way that this works, and they still keep JBJ, is Jaren Duran goes down to Worcester. The only way it works.
You're not going to do after he's the only one driving in runs in a crucial win over the Houston Astros. I mean, I guess wins are really crucial, but they're also all crucial. But the thing is, I talked myself into a JBJ Phillies trade today because, you know, like I said, having immersed myself in the Phillies the last 15 months, for one thing, they have plenty of power in their lineup. They have abysmal defense, like appallingly bad. JBJ this year, between right field and center field, has a combined +3 outs above average. the entire Phillies outfield together has a minus six outs above average. So he on his own is better than like the five outfielders that they have on their roster right now.
That's crazy.
Now, in fairness, part of that is because Bryce Harper is hurt. So, you know, you're better defender. Like, you've got Nick Castellanos and Kyle Schwarber playing the outfield because Derek Hall is playing the DH role and Bryce Harper is on the sidelines, like, fuming silently. But JBJ, so my thing is, like, if you are a team, there's a lot of teams that need outfield help, specifically center field, and the Phillies are one of them. But there's very few center field options. You know, I definitely think that now that Trey Mancini is also an Astro, that you could see Cedric Mullins being moved. But he's not having a good year. Like, he's fine, I guess. I haven't checked in on him recently, but he's not hitting like he was last year.
Right.
But there's just not a lot of options. So if you're a team like the Phillies where you don't need the offense, but you need the defense, Jack is kind of low-key a perfect fit because he can hit occasionally. But he's literally won a gold glove, and he should have won a gold glove in 2017 too, but he was robbed. So, you know, I think he's honestly a perfect fit for them. And, you know, the way that Chaim Bloom is, the Phillies won't have to give up any of their top prospects, which Dombrowski has been very clear he's not willing to do anyway. And, you know, Dombrowski's familiar with Jackie. So, plus Jackie brings that postseason experience to a team that has literally the most anti-postseason players in Segura and Real Muto, and they have the longest postseason drought in the National League. So I don't want him to leave. I love the Bradley family. But, you know, they have, like, Jackie has always been very, very nice to me when I've reached out to him with questions, you know, comments, whatever. But I do think it's a good fit. So if I am playing Chaim Bloom, it makes sense. It also means that yet another one of their longest tenured players is gone. He was already technically gone, but he'll be gone again. So that would be
a weird dynamic. But I mean, Bloom said today, there's a lot of different possibilities that could happen tomorrow. And he said, I don't think we've seen the end of the story here. So
they also just checked in with the Rays about Brett Phillips, who was DFA'd today.
Bring him over here. Bring him over here.
Like I said, can't wait to win the World Series with like 30 outfielders and no pitching. Like,
I need that Brett Phillips injury in Boston ASAP.
I will say Brett Phillips is so fun and he makes baseball so much better. Like his energy is just great. Statistically, you cannot hire someone. I mean, people are going to hear this podcast and be like, this is coming from the woman who wanted Brock Holt on the team forever. I'm like, first of all, that's the only player in postseason history to hit for the cycle. So put some respect on Brock Holt's name. He also played like every single position. But no, you can't. In a game of baseball where it's a team sport, it's not like basketball where like you could have four scrubs and Michael and like prime Michael Jordan and like get to the championships. Like you can't have a guy based on vibes. Like it doesn't work.
No, yeah, I agree.
You know, unfortunately, that's not the kind of sport that this is.
Tommy Pham mixed with Brett Phillips. Oh my God. Just like opposite vibes. But last thing for you, especially with tomorrow being today being the deadline when this is coming out, JD Martinez, Nathan Eovaldi, Rich Hill, JBJ, all could be gone. And who knows if they try to get rid of Waka, even though he's on the IL right now, but he still has a little bit of value with how well he's been doing. What dominoes do you think is going to fall? And do you think that there's going to be a big surprise that Bloom comes out of nowhere and the Sox make this incredible trade? Or
first of all, by the way, the other report is that the Yankees and the Phillies are among the other teams inquiring about Brett Phillips. So apparently this is like the bidding war that nobody saw coming. Speaking of surprises at the trade deadline.
I thought you were about to say JBJ. I was just going to be like, if we see Benintendi and JBJ in a Yankees uniform,
I would throw myself off them. I would pay for the monster seat to then catapult myself off of it like a deadly Drew Barrymore in Fever Pitch. I you know, Bloom is so unpredictable. I don't even know. Like, I think that actually might answer the thing I said at the beginning about like why it was so hard to predict how I felt about this season coming into it. People are going to hate me for saying this, but like the Chaim Bloom era hasn't even truly begun yet. Yes, he came in, immediately traded Mookie Betts, you know, like made some very questionable moves, but there were several big contracts on the books, holdovers from the Dombrowski era. Mm-hmm. And they were largely contracts that either were untouchable or just like didn't make sense to move or whatever until now. And my concern is that when all this money comes off the books at the end of either tomorrow or this season in general, whatever, both, when the Red Sox are suddenly a very empty roster come November, who will replace JD Martinez, Nathan Eovaldi, next year Chris Sale? Like, Chris Sale is the last, aside from Xander, who is like kind of in his own class because of all the opt-outs and also because he asked for that extension. Chris Sale is like the last of the Dombrowski spending era. And I'm very curious and very concerned about what the replacement in like effort will look like, because like aside from Trevor Story, he hasn't given out a contract of longer than 2 years, and I don't think he's given out a contract in excess of $20 million to anybody besides Trevor Story.
Yep.
So all of these big contracts that, you know, were weighing the Red Sox down, like they weren't his, and I don't think that he will replicate them, because everything that ownership has indicated, and of course I'm not blaming him for ownership wanting to be cheap, I'm just saying like he was hired for a reason, and the reason was to take this team in the direction of Tampa Bay and Oakland, mm-hmm. and the Diamondbacks, like the Pirates and the Diamondbacks. And so I'm like, you think that this is the Chaim Bloom era now? This is just the beginning. And that's why, like, I don't even know what tomorrow is going to bring, because yes, I think they trade Nate Eovaldi. I think they trade JD.
Mm-hmm.
I think they trade JBJ. Like, I didn't think the JBJ thing had legs until today, really, because no one was talking about it. And I think kind of because of his hitting, I feel like he's kind of an afterthought, but with his postseason experience and his fielding, I think that there are teams that have enough bat power where they're like, yeah, it's fine. Because the thing is, like, this was always my kind of refrain with JBJ when Mookie Betts was still here, which was, you know, people would be like, oh, JBJ can't hit. I'm like, yeah, where have you been for 10 years?
For real. Like, been an issue since he got caught up.
He's always been an inconsistent bat, but he's never been here to be a hitter. He's always been here to be a glove. And the hitting is just the bonus.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like at the end of the day, when he retires, like he should be remembered as the guy who came up clutch offensively in ALCS in 2018. And he'll be remembered for like a million incredible defensive like catches, you know, climbing walls. He climbed a wall tonight. He climbed the wall. That ball was like 30 feet foul. He still climbed the wall at Minute Maid. I'm like, you can't, whatever. So that's why I think that until today, he wasn't really considered a trade target. But I think he makes a lot of sense for a team like the Phillies. And so I think by tomorrow, the Red Sox will have acquired 20 new outfielders. They will have no pitching. They'll have less pitching tomorrow than they had before this afternoon. And, you know, I think they'll win 82 games. You know, I think they'll get to like maybe they'll eke out a winning record, but this isn't a postseason team. I mean, I hope I'm wrong. Look, I've always said, I'm like, I'm very happy to be wrong if it means the Red Sox win. Like, you want to old takes expose me in October when they win the wild card game and then they go play the Yankees? Like, great. I will be so happy. I'll be like, I'll eat my words, whatever. If this weird ass bunch of guys, this ragtag motley crew somehow figures it out. But, you know, I just, at the end of the day, I think the biggest issue is, like, look at the Yankees at the trade deadline. They were already so good, and now they have presumably gotten better. Like, Frankie Montas, his numbers against the Red Sox are absurd. So, like, if you thought the Red Sox were struggling against the Yankees already, buckle up. But it's, like, it's not even just about competing with their division and with the rest of the league. It's this team has so many holes in their roster right now that it's hard to see them even filling them just to be a competent team, let alone a contending team. And that's why I'm just kind of like, this sucks, but it happens. There have been plenty of teams that come into a season with a lot of potential and then just get smacked with injuries. And at the end of the day, like, it's not going to be the underperforming. And yes, the roster was questionably constructed, but ultimately the thing that has been the biggest killer has been the injuries. And that sucks, but it's like, okay, so are we going to push this? Are we going to say, okay, it's not our year. Four championships in 15 years. Like, let the Mariners and the Phillies have a turn and let's just focus on the future. Like, I don't personally see, as long as you're locking in Devers and Bogarts, which is a whole different conversation. Yep. As long as that is squared away, I really don't care about the rest, because the farm system is growing and you are getting things. You're getting a return for these players as opposed to them walking in free agency. So if the season's a little bit disappointing, you know, we're just very spoiled people. Like, it's, it hasn't been Cleveland's year since 1948. Like, we're sitting here moaning about, you know, oh, we're trading at the deadline. Like, there are teams with no World Series trophies. There are teams who haven't won one since before my father was born. Like, I'm just kind of like, okay, you know, it's annoying. I sat at the 28 run game two Fridays ago.
I like, did that.
I mean, I left in the fifth inning when it was 23-3, but I'm just saying, like, we are very spoiled people, and I'm just kind of like, okay, like, it is what it is. You know, injuries happen, stuff happens. Like, are we going to sit around and moan about it? Or are we just going to, like, move forward and focus on the important thing? Like, get Bogarts and Devers signed, free up all that cash, get some good pitching. Like, you know, remind the owners what city this is so that they spend money again. And, like, let's do this for next year. It's fine. Like, it's not a big deal. I turn 30 next year. Do it for me. Do it for my 30th birthday.
I honestly couldn't have said it any better. And, you know, they just got to take that money, give it to Devers, give it to Bogarts, because the price just went way up for Devers. I don't know if Austin Riley just signed a 10-year, $212 million contract. You're going to have to give him way more than that. So, gonna be really interesting. Like, oh,
we'll give you the Matt Olson deal.
Exactly.
Good Lord.
Makes no sense, but gonna be pretty crazy to see what happens tomorrow. Everybody get excited. So many moves could happen, so many different possibilities. Heim Bloom said it himself, but really appreciate you giving your insight tonight, Gabrielle. Where can people follow you? Where can people hear more about your insight?
Well, thank you for having me. It's always nice to come back. So you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at GFSTARR1. And you can read me on FanSided. I have a weekly column on the main FanSided website. I run BoSox Injection, which is the Boston Red Sox website. If you care about the Phillies, like, I've got content on our Phillies site, which I also run. And, you know, go Sox. I mean, I don't.
that's how we
didn't even talk about the game tonight, and it was just such a weird game. So I'm just like, I don't really know how to feel. I've written probably seven articles today. Like, I just, I'm done. I'm spent. Like,
well, if you want to go and read her articles, she does an amazing job of putting this energy, putting this personality into words on a piece of paper that you can read on your laptop. And definitely go and check her out on Twitter, because she has some great tweets outside of the Red Sox and has a really witty personality. Go over and check her out. But greatly appreciate you coming on. As always, Gabrielle, we got to get you on again.
Oh, anytime, Jake.
We hope that you did enjoy this episode of the Locked On Red Sox podcast. And we're curious to hear your thoughts about all these trades going on. Obviously, both Lauren and I are a little bit sad about Christian Vasquez leaving town after being with the Red Sox organization for 14 years. But not only the Vasquez trade, we want to hear your thoughts about Diekman and Pham as well. Make sure to tweet us over at @LO_Red Sox or also myself @ShakeIggy or also my co-host Lauren. It's @LaLaLa. Three laws, Lauren, with four R's. We want to hear your thoughts. We're really curious about how you guys are feeling about some of these trades and what this could mean for the Red Sox going into the second half. But especially with the trade deadline today, we can see a lot more different moves. And, you know, as I just mentioned, make sure to go over and give us a follow at Locked On Red Sox over on Twitter. It's @LO_Red Sox. But we want to thank you so much for making Locked On Red Sox your first listen of every single day. Now make sure to make your second listen, Locked On MLB Podcast. MLB expert Paul Francis Sullivan brings you humor, passion, and his unique perspective on every team. So make sure to follow the number one daily league-wide podcast, Locked On MLB, on the Odyssey app, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts. And today, Lauren and I are going to be going on there live, giving our reactions to the different trades that the Red Sox will be making before the deadline at 6 p.m. So make sure, if you are not yet, to subscribe to the Locked On Red Sox podcast on whatever audio platform that you're listening to right now. Or if you're watching us on YouTube, go down there right now and click the subscribe button, because we post Monday through Friday to keep you updated about everything that is going on with the Boston Red Sox. But before we end this episode, I want to thank you so much again for listening to the Locked On Red Sox podcast. Make sure to give myself a follow on Twitter. It's @ShakeIggy, as well as my co-host Lauren. It's @LaLaLa. Three laws, Lauren, with four R's. But hope everybody has a great rest of their day, and let's hope and pray the Red Sox make some moves to stay competitive during the second half and fight to hoist up that World Series trophy. But we'll end it how we always end it, even though the vibes are a little bit weird right now with the trade deadline going on. Let's go, Sox. Peace.